Welcome to She Reads, a podcast for book lovers everywhere. I'm Siobhan.
I'm Hunter.
And I'm Elizabeth.
Okay, so as usual, we are going to begin with Elizabeth. What are you reading this week?
So this week, I am reading How to Be Single by Liz DiCullo. So that's the same person that wrote He's Just Not That Into You. And then I'm also reading All the Single Ladies, so Unmarried Women and the Rise of an Independent Nation. So
good theme.
Yeah, so deep down you can tell that I'm secretly very romantic. I also recently finished the Sophie Kinsella book that recently came out and called My Not So Perfect Life.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that.
I loved it.
Yeah, I finished it in like 2 days.
It's really contemporary. Mm-hmm. Just as, like, because we just came out of a program that had, like, marketing specialty classes, it has to do with the girl who works in marketing. So I was like, I know what that is. Like, mm-hmm. I know what they're talking about.
Is it a publishing? Is the character a publishing?
No, she does, like, brand marketing. Brand marketing.
Cool.
And the thing that I liked the most about it was, you know how sometimes when someone writes a character for so long, even when they write different books, they still write the same character? I liked that this wasn't the same character. Like, she was a little different from the Shopaholic books. Same sort of theme.
Have you read any of her other ones?
Not the other ones, but they're just the Shopaholics.
Oh, I like her other ones. I like her other ones more than the Shopaholic.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Can You Keep a Secret? Amazing book.
I'll put them on my mic.
To read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, okay. Siobhan.
So I, again, am not good at answering this question, but this week I've been actually spending my time on the TTC reading a submission that I'm trying to decide if it's good or not. So that's exciting. And then we have conference Monday, Tuesday, which means I've been reading a lot of internal stuff. So things that I can't talk about yet, but, that's what I've been reading. So I'm sorry. No fun. Well, it's
still fun.
Still fun.
Just secret fun.
Secret fun.
Okay, my turn. I just finished reading a book called Miss You by Kate, I'm going to butcher her last name, Everlyn.
That's an amazing last name.
It's not, like, it doesn't seem like it should be tricky, but it's just if it's a...
Yeah.
It
could be fancy. Mm-hmm.
Everlyn. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it's, about, like, two teenagers. They're 18. They're both from England, and they're both in Florence on vacation, and they kind of half meet in Florence, and then it follows them throughout the rest of their lives and how their lives continue to be connected. And it was good, and I read it in one day. I binge read it, and I wish it hadn't have ended. Because I did really like it, and it was kind of upbeat, and everything on my shelf that I haven't read seems to be literary and pretty dark. So it was a good change of pace. And then continuing with the change of pace, I just finished the three Pottermore Presents novellas, the one about Hogwarts, the one about power and politics, and the one about heroes. And oh my God, JK, just keep giving it to me because... Mm. It just takes me right back, and it makes me want to reread all of the Harry Potter books again.
Mm-hmm.
But they were good. I would recommend.
Yeah.
And they're quick, so it gives you, like, a good dose of Harry Potter to your day.
If you just need, like, a microdose of Harry Potter.
Everybody needs a microdose of Harry Potter.
And you can add to your Goodreads challenge.
Yes, and...
That's three books.
Three books are now on my Goodreads when all three together are the size of a book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's that.
That's that. Okay, so today we're adjusting our schedule for topics, and we're doing a bit of a special episode, a memorial episode. A couple weeks ago, my dad passed away. And so we wanted to talk about the best dads of the literary world that have shaped our world and This one's for my dad. This one's for Jerry. So, love you, and let's talk about some of the best dads. And I'm trying not to cry.
It's okay to cry.
Not in a podcast episode.
No one can see you anyway.
Yeah, so here we go. And so we're going to start with the best dad characters. And I feel like you can't talk about father characters. Well, there's a couple, but the one that I'm going to start with is Mr. Weasley from Harry Potter, because everyone needs a dose of Harry Potter. There's a cat here.
It's cool.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention, we're filming at my house today at the farm. So if you hear roosters in the background or us laughing about cat hair, this is the farm.
And we're all together.
And we're all together. So, yeah, Harry Potter, Mr. Weasley, the redheaded father of seven?
Seven.
Seven. That's a lot of kids. It's a lot of boys. Poor Ginny. But I was saying when we were prepping for this episode that there is one moment from both the books and the movies for Mr. Weasley that I have always loved, and it's when Harry comes to the Burrow for the first time, and Mr. Weasley gets home from work, and Mrs. Weasley's freaking out because the boys stole the car, and he's so proud of them, and he's like, how'd it go? And I just can't get over that.
Yeah. He's good. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
I feel like also in the movies they portray, like, the father figure that he is for Harry so well. Like, every time they're reunited, he's so happy to see Harry. He's like, welcome home, you know. I think that that's a nice touch that they've portrayed well in the movies.
And even just Arthur's eclectic love of Muggle artifacts and Muggle things, that's just carried on throughout the books. And
he loves to learn.
Yeah.
And he loves his job because it lets him do that, and he's not completely very successful for the first few books, but then he does become like an important person for the Ministry of Magic, and he joins the Order of the Phoenix, which they didn't in the first rising of Voldemort. He is a very honorable character.
Yeah,
and he's like such a good taste of like that eclectic weird dad who's just like unapologetically weird and just like himself. Yeah. And it's just like, be whoever you want to be, make jokes for a living, or steal cars and have adventures.
Yeah. And he's like the supportive dad, but laid back enough that it balances with Mrs. Weasley, who is overbearing, maybe, a little tad bit, but...
But still an amazing character.
Still, all of them are.
Yeah. The Weasley family, they're just...
Yeah.
Good people.
Good folk, them Weasleys.
Good fake people.
It's just a bonus that they're all gingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a weakness for any redhead character, basically. So, yeah. And then I guess maybe we'll keep on with the Harry Potter
pack. Yeah.
Yeah.
You talk about the next one and I'll cover the last one that you don't agree with.
Well, it's not that I don't agree with it. My next one is... More of, like, also a father figure, but Remus Lupin, I think, along with being the first real Defense Against the Dark Arts professor they had at Hogwarts, he's also just an amazing father figure to Harry, and I think that he just, having that sort of, like, love for, I mean, his best friend's son, who's going through all these terrible things, and just showing him, and also I just remember a teachable moment for, like, Harry with Lupin in the seventh book when Lupin finds out Tonks is pregnant and he leaves her and he comes to Grimmauld Place, and then Harry gets mad at him because Lupin wants to go on, like, to go fight and find the Horcruxes, and Harry is, like, basically, like, no, like, you need to go, like, be with your son or your child. I don't think it was a boy at that point, because Tonks had just figured out. And I don't know, I think it's just, like, another representation of, like, the complicated, really, like, I think we'll take it as,
like, complicated role.
Yeah, of, like, parenting, just because of, like, who Lupin was, like, as a werewolf. But I still think the relationship that Lupin had with Harry was such an important one and such a good, strong one, because Harry didn't have father figure, like, in Uncle Vernon, he wasn't a good.
No.
He was awful. He was a
abuser. Examples of worst fathers in
literature. Yeah.
Well, and then Lupin helped Harry overcome his greatest fear, which was teaching him the Patronus.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harry feared fear itself.
Mm-hmm. Adorable. So I also love the chocolate scene.
Yeah.
When Lupin gives them chocolate. Every time I feel like I'm in a bad mood and I have some dark chocolate, I'm like, Lupin would think it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Get those Dementors out of your life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then the last Harry Potter figure we'll talk about is Sirius Black, who I adore. And we were talking about this when we were prepping, and I was like, Sirius Black is, like, a great father figure. And Elizabeth was not having it.
It's not that I don't agree with you as a father figure. I think he just wanted Harry to be James.
Right. Yeah.
But he still is a valid father figure. Like we said, parents aren't perfect. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And he just wants to be there in Harry's life so badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, like, why he ends up dying. He's, like, trying to fight for Harry and fight for...
I think that if the circumstances had been different, he would have been a great parent to raise Harry.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was, like... I just, the whole time, was rooting so hard for Sirius to, like, get his shit together and be the dad for Harry. I was like, he just needs you! Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just, like, my dream father figure for Harry.
Yeah.
That just wasn't realized. I haven't let go.
Yeah. Like, an alternate reality of, like, Lupin and Sirius raising Harry together.
Oh, so great. Somebody's already written that fan fiction. Oh, probably. Sure. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of...
I'll search for it.
Sirius and Remus / stories out there.
Why does everything have to be romantic? Why can't they just be really great co-parents?
Like, I'm all for / but...
Yeah, me too.
I just want Sirius to be Harry's dad.
Yeah.
Can't have everything in the world.
No, you can. No. In this fictional world of Harry Potter.
So, moving on. Who wants to take the next one?
I will. The ultimate classic father figure that, if you bring up a literary dad, this is the one that will probably come to your mind.
The first on every list.
Yeah, the first on every single list online. Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird. Atticus is a lawyer who is a fantastic father to his two children. He fights racism in that book. I haven't read Ghost at a Watchman.
Don't read it.
Don't. Yeah.
Well,
anyway. You can go into it. My disclaimer for anyone is that you can go into it, but it will change the way that you look at Atticus. But I think we were talking about this before. Where, I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird is Scout's, what, 10? 9?
Yeah, she's young. Younger than a teenager.
Yes, and that's kind of the age where you think your parents are rock stars, and I think it's okay to think that your parents are, like, perfect humans and can do, like, no wrong. But then, I mean, realistically, Atticus Finch was a white man. A
fictional human.
He was a white man in the Deep South.
Yeah.
In the... like, 50s, 60s, so he, even if, like, some of the To Kill a Mockingbird, he was fighting for the rights of this black man, he probably had some institutionalized racism in it, which is realistic.
Which is what it comes across in Ghost at a Watchman.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so if you think about it as Scout, just coming to the realization of, like, being an adult and seeing her father for what he is or what he was, or, like, a more broad view of him.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's one way of reading it.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you still want to, I just like to think of Atticus Finch as a perfect human and Gregory Peck.
He's so great.
Mm-hmm.
And just instills, like, that urge to fight for what you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And, fighting for what you deserve and what you think others deserve. Mm-hmm. And fighting for those who can't fight for themselves.
Exactly. You don't shoot a mockingbird because mockingbirds don't do anything except for saying.
Yep.
Okay. Keep going.
Okay. Can I do one?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about Otto Frank in The Diary of Anne Frank, who is an actual real person also, and also an actual real fantastic father. And I think that comes across in Anne's writing. But it also comes across in the fact that he fought to have Anne's diary published. Anne's writing as this, like, very supportive and literally would have, like, died to protect her kind of father. But he also, after he was the only survivor from his family, he went through the effort to have Anne Frank's diary published. And, yeah, he's kept her memory and her story and their story alive. So yeah, I think he's great. He's a great father figure. And also just one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Very good. The next one I'm going to talk about is Matthew Cuthbert from Anne of Green Gables. Of course, I can't go one podcast without talking about Anne of Green Gables. So Matthew Cuthbert is Anne's adoptive father, and he is a strong, silent, but also so supportive type. I mean, Anne went through a lot of trauma that's not really specifically stated in the book, but it's, like, very, like, in the subtext. And I think Matthew just unconditionally, from the moment that he met her, was in love with her and would do anything for Anne. And I think that's just such a beautiful sentiment and idea that you can just meet people and automatically they can make such an impact on you. And even just in the big and small things, like just buying in something like puffed sleeves, which meant so much to her. And he didn't really understand it, but he knew that it meant a lot to her. So yeah, Matthew Cuthbert.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah, classic. Okay, so then I'm going to take a minute to talk about The Dad from Inkheart by Cornelia Funk. He's a bookbinder, which is a fantastic career.
Don't we wish we all were bookbinders?
Yeah, not something that's very common these days, but his name is Mo, and he has this deep secret that he hides from his daughter. He's a single parent. We're trying to raise her the best he can, but he will not read aloud because he has the magical power that when he reads aloud, the book comes to life and the characters will come out of the book and he can actually read someone into a book. And that's what happened to his wife. He accidentally got her stuck with this villain that he read out from the book. I think the book in the book is called Inkheart, which is quite
so meta.
Yeah. And but he's just so supportive of his daughter, and he tries so hard to protect her from something that he sees was his mistake, but really it's a beautiful talent, and he has a deep appreciation for books. And that just speaks volumes to me personally. So I always loved the Inkheart series when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably reread it soon.
Why not?
When I get through the pile that I already haven't read yet. But okay.
Okay, I'm going to talk about another one of my favorites that I'm sure I've talked about before. All the Light You Cannot See. The father in that book, his name is Daniel LeBlanc, and he is Marie-Laure.
You're getting all fancy with your
my accent. French, I know. I'm sorry. Marie-Laure's father. He's a locksmith, and he works at the National Museum of Natural History. And he is just like such a wonderful father that it seems like so imagined, but he's like so great, and he does everything in his power to make his daughter's life better even before they get implicated in the war. She's blind, which is not a spoiler. Pretty sure it's in the copy on the back of the book. But she's blind, and he's really handy and makes things out of wood, and so he makes her a town, a replica of their town, so that she can memorize it with her hands and then learn to walk around it by learning the streets with her hands and then memorizing that so she can walk around and be safe. So even, like, that's, like, the intricacy that it took to make that for her, just so that she could be safer in her town and just be able to walk around as a kind of an independent girl. Like, that in itself is an amazing feat that he does as a father, but that doesn't even begin to touch on the things that he does for her in this mm-hmm. book. Once they get implicated in the war and they have to fight for themselves and fend for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And
he just makes sure that she always, every birthday she gets a Braille book, and he makes sure that she knows how to read Braille so that she can still enjoy books.
Yes. Clearly
we like books. We like people who like books.
We like father figures who pass on the love of reading to their children.
It's funny because my dad could only be caught with a book if he was in a hammock in Costa Rica. But he did love podcasts. So nice. If he was still with us, he would be listening to the podcast. Nice. So, I think that's a good place to move on.
Okay, so before we get to news, we're going to talk about some authors who we think are, or that we know from kind of like historical fact, etc., that they were good fathers or they did things in their writing to reflect their role as a father.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to start, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I can start. I'm going to talk about Robert Munsch. So Robert Munsch is the Canadian children's author that lots of people read Robert Munsch books growing up, and one of his most popular books, Love You Forever, he actually wrote that book for two of his stillborn children. So the book he had this song in his head that he couldn't even bring himself to sing because it would just make him cry just thinking about two of his children that passed away. But then he wrote the book. And I cry every time. Mm-hmm. Siobhan was playing a little bit of it before, and I was crying. Just such a beautiful, because, you don't really know what it's like to be a parent until you actually have your own child. But that's one of the wonderful things about books is that you can build empathy and you can mm-hmm. help other people realize, like, what those feelings of, like, loving somebody so unconditionally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then he's now, like, shared that song and that book with so many,
how many other parents. Copies did we
sell? His website said it sold over 15 million copies.
Which is insane.
Which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I'm hoping, like, imagine that's, like, worldwide and not just Canada.
Yeah.
Because they're that
impossible. Yeah, that's not.
But yeah, that he shared that message with so many people in the world,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go next. I remember learning about this years ago and just having a change in respect for the author Roald Dahl. Is it Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? I always get confused mm-hmm. whether it's Willy Wonka or Charlie.
It's Charlie.
James and the Giant Peach. So many classics from childhood. Matilda.
Yeah, Matilda.
Matilda. But his book, The BFG, he actually wrote it for his daughter who passed away from measles. And so he was creating this character that could love this creature that was so otherworldly and would, of course, immediately appear like something scary and bad. And then he named the character after his granddaughter. So it showed, like, his love for his child, that he was going to try and remember her in this way, and then also that he was a grandparent and he had a respect mm-hmm. for little girls.
Mm-hmm. And love.
And love. Yeah.
Okay, so the last one we're going to talk about is A.A. Milne, so the creator of Winnie the Pooh and all of the adventures that have come out of his books. So A.A. Milne created the Winnie the Pooh stories, well, let's say for his son, Christopher Robin. So Christopher Robin was actually A.A. Milne's son and then becomes a character in Winnie the Pooh. And Christopher Robin got a teddy bear that inspired the character of Winnie the Pooh on his first birthday. And then, of course, everyone knows the story of Winnie the actual bear, who was from Winnipeg, who they saw in the London Zoo. So there's a nice Canadian connection there. But I think it's just sweet that Well, or he, I like to think.
He created an entire, like, forest and friend group for his son in this metaphorical way, fictional way. Mm-hmm. It's
exactly
beautiful.
And then again, that passing on of this world to so many other children and so many other families. Mm-hmm. And like, yes, Disney has done what Disney does with it, but at least they've shared it with the world. Yeah. So that's that.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To the dads.
To the dads.
To the dads.
To Jerry.
Okay, on to the book news.
Alrighty. So not a terribly exciting, well, some exciting things happened. Good Canadian book news. Kids Can Press won the Best Publisher of the Year at the Bologna Book Fair for 2017. So that's very exciting for not only Canadian books, but also small press books. They're a Canadian children's publisher. And also exciting that 2 years in a row, a Canadian publisher has won. So last year, the prize went to Groundwood Books, which is the children's publisher at House Winansi here in Toronto. So congrats to them. That's really exciting. And it's nice to see Canadian publishers getting the recognition they deserve around the world. So that's exciting for that.
Very exciting.
So Shelfie was acquired by Kobo. And Shelfie was a Vancouver-based company where users could essentially take a picture of their shelf and get a discounted digital edition of the print titles that they already owned. So this is pretty exciting to see Kobo taking over another way that people can consume media. And we'll see if anything happens.
Like, I don't know if it means Shelfie's still going to exist, but on Kobo, or they were just like, we're just going to take all these talented people that you no longer have jobs for.
Yeah, or
if and the technology, too, so they might add it into their app and you could take a picture, and it would bring you to the titles.
I'm curious how that would happen, though, with, like, also, like, digital rights management, because who's to say that I just don't take a picture of, like, Hunter's bookshelf?
Yeah, and that's why it probably fell through, right? There's so many issues with just taking a picture of books and then getting a discounted
ebook with it. It's not like there's like a specific number attached to each.
How can they offer that many discounted ebooks?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, so, for us, because I guess some people don't have the size of bookshelves that we do.
Yeah,
this is true. But anyway, it should be interesting what they do with that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so some book adjacent news. CBC Reads recently ended. And they chose 15 Dogs, which we've talked about on this podcast before. It's a Coach House book. It's by Andre Alexi. And it's about 15 dogs that are gifted human consciousness. I did read one other book that was on the Canada Reads list. I meant to read others, but life gets in the way. I just don't know. They advertise Canada Reads competition as the winner is the book that everyone in Canada should read. Mm-hmm. And while 15 Dogs is a fantastic novel, is it really the book
that every Canadian
needs to
read? Right now.
Because other books on the list brought up things like Aboriginal equality and Aboriginal rights. And one was science fiction, which I did, that's the one I read, Company Town by Madeline Ashby, and it was excellent. I didn't see it winning. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people thought 15 Dogs was going
to. Yeah, and I was very shocked when the break
was
out in the first day.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think we're all proud of Andre for getting more recognition, but also I think a lot of Canada has already read 15 Dogs because it got the Giller last year, and so if CBC Reads is trying to get Canadian content into more Canadians' hands, then I don't know.
I don't really see 15 Dogs as a specifically Canadian book either.
Mm-hmm, true. Just the fact that it's based in Toronto.
Yeah. But that, I mean, you could really put that situation anywhere. Yeah, whereas, like, especially, like, other Aboriginal issues are very Canadian-centric. And I think this is also just, like, contributing to more, like, Aboriginal erasure.
Yeah. So. Definitely. So we just got a little political there, but
that's our thoughts.
That's,
And also, let's steer more into the political-ish which is something I'm personally offended by. So the Anne of Green Gables, so the CBC.
You can't even go 20 minutes without talking about it.
So, Anne of Green Gables, the reboot, has been premiering on the CBC, and it was also going on Netflix. And so the ad for the Netflix has been released, and they completely changed and photoshopped Anne from the original poster to this Netflix one. They've brightened her skin, they've made her teeth whiter, she doesn't have the bags underneath her eyes anymore. Mm-hmm.
Her eyes are way more blue.
Mm-hmm. They removed some of her freckles.
Yeah. Which, something that just really makes me angry as somebody who loves Anne of Green Gables. I also obviously loved, like, the Melissa Gilbert Anne, but that her, like, just the way that she looks was not really reflective of that, the Anne and how she looked in the books, because Anne in the books was homely looking, and she had bags under her eyes, and she had a lot of freckles, and she wasn't this, like, beautiful 11-year-old. She was a very homely looking kid, and I think I just don't agree with the photoshopping, especially of a child. I don't think that's necessary.
She looks so old in it. The new one. I mean, she already looks older than she is in the CBC ad or poster. But even in the Netflix one, she just looks like she could be a late teenager.
She looks like a contestant on Toddlers and Terrors.
Oh my god, creepy.
Yeah,
but yes, yeah. They've just they elongated her face.
Yeah,
like why? I don't understand.
We will include the pictures in the show notes so that people can give their opinion on the changes. Just between the two posters is bizarre.
That's not even between... It's not like there's changes, I imagine, in the actual content.
I really hope not. That'd be a lot of wasted effort. Yeah, seriously.
But, yeah, people clearly thought it was worth their time to make those Photoshop changes.
And then our last piece of... news is the Harry Potter Escape Room coming to the Toronto area, Oshawa, technically, opening April 15th. Siobhan tried to book us in, and when were they booked till?
The first weekend that they had availability was July 9th. So don't get your hopes up, guys, if you haven't got your tickets yet, because clearly they're selling it quickly. And of course, it's only a Harry Potter, so we were like, how did they get the copyright for that.
Mm-hmm.
But they do call it a Harry Potter themed escape room. But the gist is that you're escaping Hogwarts.
But also,
who would want to escape Hogwarts?
Exactly! I know! Right? I'd be like, no, it's okay. I'm just going to hang out here.
No, I'm just going to stay here for a minute.
I don't want to answer any of these clues.
It should be like the Ministry of Magic or the Dursleys' house.
Oh my gosh, the Dursleys' house would be so great.
We should make this.
Okay. Yeah. Next project.
Yeah, less magical. Or, like, even something, I guess they did cover under the issues with escaping something from, like, the books.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the Department of Mysteries. The Forbidden Forest.
Oh, the Forbidden Forest would be good.
That'd be good.
Or, like, the spider enclave, or whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
That's in the Forbidden
Forest. The spider's den, or something.
That's so great. Anyways, clearly we're making too many ideas for our future project.
Yeah.
More on your daily dose of Harry Potter today. Listeners.
Yeah.
That's us.
So we want to thank you for listening, and please rate and review us on iTunes so we can become more discoverable, and we can hear what you like about us and tweet at us too.
Yeah.
So we're at She Reads Podcast on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find us on our website at shereadspodcast.wordpress.com. Haven't bought that domain yet. We haven't made no money from this.
Made no money.
But that's all right, because that's what we do.
And as always, thanks to Gavin, our fairy god musician.
Cool.
That's us.
Bye, gang.
Bye.
Bye.